You're listening to Trash Cat Tech Chat, a LibrePunk podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Trash Cat Tech Chat. I am Trash Cat. My pronouns are they, them.
My name is Penryn. My pronouns are she, they.
And, what do you want to talk about today? You have, like, a list of topics, right?
I have some ideas,
at least.
I have a list of short-form notes that sort of center around various topics, in a sense. So, yeah. I think we'll definitely piece together some topics from them. But,
cool.
Yeah. A lot of the stuff I have to talk about kind of just centers around peer-to-peer, which, you know, it's a pretty hot topic. I mean, it's always kind of a hot topic because people are always torrenting things. So, you know, It's not going anywhere.
Except the young kids don't know how to torrent. The newer thing is just like, well, a lot of people just use streaming services, right? And don't really know anything else. But then also a lot of people, like, I want to watch a show, Google show free watch online, and then go to some sketchy website that lets you stream it, but also has some sketchy JavaScript stuff going on.
Yeah, there's just, yeah. No, yeah, you're definitely right. I'm like, when I'm with other people and they want to watch a movie, that's generally how they do it. But
yeah.
Yeah.
You want to explain what BitTorrent is for anyone in the audience who might not know?
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not going to give like a super like in-depth, but like I'll go into it enough so that like you kind of know what it is and you'll know what the concept of like torrenting something is. Well, basically, a lot of people understand that when you're downloading something, you're generally just making a request to like some sort of server, and then the server just downloads the file onto your computer sort of deal. And in that sense, you're kind of relying on, you know, some other external source to get the content. But with torrenting, it's a little bit different because you actually basically download a file from a whole bunch of other people at the same time. You're just sort of like seeding it. I'm catching myself going into that little like the scuttlebutt developer trying to do the arms with the
the
diagram, but
Zena.
But yeah, absolutely. But when a lot of people talk about torrenting, they generally talk about it because, well, if you're not relying off any particular servers and you're just relying off, you know, the downloading from other people, you can get away with, you know, like illegal content or like movies and music and stuff like that. And of course that exists, but a lot of the power of peer-to-peer and BitTorrent don't really necessarily have anything to do with that in particular, and more have to do with just a better way of using computers where you can sort of rely off devices that already exist and that you're using instead of like external servers and things like that.
Yeah. Like, and so concretely some benefits of torrenting, right? It provides, it's a more efficient way of doing things. It relieves the strain on like an individual server by distributing the work of sharing the file. It lets you get pieces from lots of different places potentially faster than you could download like from a single source that has to serve to everyone, right? It also provides like fault tolerance, which can benefit in the direction of like censorship resistance, but it also like let me explain what I'm trying to say. If you download a file from a server, you can only do that if the server is up. Now, the server can go down for any number of reasons. One of them
Absolutely.
Can be that it gets shut down by a legal request or by getting seized by the government agency or whatever. It can be like an explicit censorship act.
Right.
It also can just be misconfiguration. It can be there's a power outage. It can be any number of things that cause the server to go down.
Yeah, the company just shut down. It could legit be the company just doesn't exist anymore and they just shut down their server.
Yeah, absolutely. And BitTorrent provides a more resilient infrastructure for that, because if like you're no longer relying on a single server to serve the data to everyone, now you can have multiple computers. They're all peers with each other, right? It's peer-to-peer. Right. You can have multiple peers which have copies of the file that can share it with anyone who wants it. And if one of those peers goes down, the other ones can still share the file.
Yeah, absolutely. And that makes it really useful for resisting censorship and like fault tolerance. And it's also just really helpful for, you know, things like in the age of cloud ecosystems, where we really like the idea of being able to connect to the internet and then our data just being safe. Like that sort of idea is very compatible with sort of like the peer-to-peer sort of infrastructure. For example, something like SyncThing, where if you have, say, 4, 5, 6 devices that are all sharing the same SyncThing folder, which is essentially just a SyncThing instance in a sense, you have like very resistant fault tolerance for essentially the same thing that is a like a cloud backend for something like iCloud or such.
For people who don't know, SyncThing is just kind of a tool for syncing files between multiple different computers. Is that fair enough to say?
That's a very good description of it. It a slightly more technical, but I think also a fairly good description would be that you get to share and sync the state of a folder. So you could have a folder on your computer, and then all your computers have that same folder, and all the contents inside of that folder will always try to stay the same between all the devices. So it is a little bit different than something like iCloud in that sense, where you don't necessarily have a local state where all of the files that are in, for example, like your Google Drive or like your iCloud or whatever, are not on your device. They're on something else. Something like SyncThing, it's still on your devices, but the state is shared between all the other devices.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just a little bit of a technical difference there.
Yeah. And that's really useful. I mean, so like, I know someone, not going to name names, obviously, but I know someone personally who often, or at least often enough that I hear about it, runs into the issue that they need a file and they think that they saved it on their computer, but actually they only saved it to the like cloud storage service that they use.
Right.
And because whatever reason, because that service isn't working properly or because they're offline or something, they can't access the file when they need it. And like, that's a common enough issue that
it really is. Yeah. Yeah. It really made me realize that like, you know what? I don't actually mind having the files like on my device, because that means that they're always there. I always have a local copy, but also I have the same redundancy for something that like a cloud would offer, which is just like really cool.
And storage is really cheap these days. I mean,
yeah, no, absolutely. Like my current Android smartphone I have, internal storage is 128 gigabytes. I don't have a lot of apps, so that's a lot of room.
And that is a lot.
In my SyncThing shared folder is about like it never gets over 10 gigabytes. So like, I don't care. Like that's nothing. Yeah. And that's 10 gigabytes across, you know, like 6 different devices. So like, you have the same sort of redundancy as effectively like a cloud RAID array. If anyone's listeners are familiar with a RAID, like a hardware configuration for storing data across separate drives. It's basically the same concept, it's just across different devices.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess I kind of wanted to go off that a little bit to something that you actually did have an earlier episode on, because I listened to like two of your episodes, I think. I'm still going through them. But and that's Trust.
Yeah, that was the first one, right?
Yeah, it was the first one. So when it comes to peer-to-peer, I think it's really interesting to talk about like trust because generally speaking, when we use like a cloud ecosystem or a cloud storage, we kind of just have to trust whoever we're using it, whoever is holding onto our data for us. We just kind of have to trust them.
And can I clarify real quick, what do you mean by trust here? Do you mean in the sense of entrust them with the privacy of your data or entrust them with like the availability of your data? What's the thing there that you're focusing on? Or all of the above?
Yeah, I guess technically both. I was gonna say you're definitely trusting them to like keep it private, but I was gonna say that we very easily have reason to not trust them. They could potentially benefit from our data. I think I could say that pretty much anyone who wants to say, "Hey, I'll hold on to that for you," they could potentially benefit from misusing it. So like we have to trust them, but also we have reason not to. And I think the really interesting thing about peer-to-peer, and this kind of relates to BitTorrent too, is the only people who really hold on to it are people who like it's important to, right? Like I can trust all the different six devices I have because they all belong to me. One of them could get stolen, but of course, the hash, that's a threat model, But yeah, it just it really just like peer-to-peer infrastructure sort of it improves trust by cutting out potential people who would want to benefit from you doing something with your data, whether it be collecting metadata or something that they could generate ad revenue from, or there's any number of reasons, but yeah.
I guess the other I mentioned like privacy, which would be in like security, we talk about like the CIA triad, right? The like confidentiality, integrity, and availability or authenticity, depending on context. And I'm now thinking about like integrity of the data also. Like they could it would be interesting to threat model around like what can say a cloud provider, how can say a cloud provider modify your data that it has access to control over to some gain? That's an interesting question. Maybe not what we need to focus on this podcast, but
And I think when it comes to cloud storage, it's important to consider that it's part of an entire ecosystem. So if you are using Google Drive to hold onto your data, I'm not saying that they might be tampering with your data, but the thing is that they don't have to because you have a Google account, and I mean that's useful in any number of ways. So you like really would when you decide to use any part of that ecosystem, it's benefiting the whole thing.
I'm just thinking like they could tamper with the data, and that's an interesting thing
Oh yeah,
to explore.
definitely could.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, maybe they I wouldn't expect that's not the concern that I would expect to be the highest concern, right, with this situation. But
Yeah.
it could be, and that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I also had some notes just on the concept of file collections. That definitely ties into stuff like cloud service providers and cloud ecosystems because nowadays people's file collections generally exist on something like that. Or maybe you like download a bunch of movies and you just like kind of just have them. Sometimes people do that too. But yeah, I guess the concept of file collections has like really, really changed like over the past like 20 years. Like even like yeah, like throughout like even like my lifetime. And like I was definitely born in a time where people were already like using computers quite a bit, but the quick change to like big companies with like big cloud systems and like AWS and stuff like that, all of a sudden like file availability is just so high that people don't really think of like having files anymore. They just kind of expect it to be like taken care of, which is easy to think about when like, you know, most servers and like services people use have such high like uptimes and availabilities, things like that.
I think it's interesting to kind of look at the, like, the progression of that over time, right? Because if you go back to, you know, when, say, email was first a thing that people used in, like, universities and stuff, right? In niche use cases. Like, no one left emails on servers. That was not a thing. You popped your email from the server and then deleted it and had a local copy because no one had like whoever was running the email server didn't have enough storage for everyone to just leave their emails on the server.
Right. Yeah. They didn't want it.
Yeah. And then I think it was Gmail that changed this. I don't have a source for this. I just think I've heard that, but I think it was Gmail that changed that. Right.
For me personally, I would agree. Yeah. I created a free Gmail account, and now you have like, you know, even just like 1 or 2 gigabytes of like free like mailbox space, like just for email, and like 1 or 2 gigabytes of emails is a lot of emails.
Oh yeah. Especially since you can't have emails that are bigger than like 25 megabytes, right?
Right, of course.
The classic problem. Yeah, of trying to send someone a file.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think I really mentioned this while we've been recording, but like it does fit into peer-to-peer, and it's very topical in the sense of just giving people files, like sending someone a file, which is just something we're always doing, something we're always using like different types of technology for, like sending someone a file for Discord or email or like, you know, whatever, is Magic Wormhole. I'm sure some people have heard of it, but it's great. I have it like on my laptop, I have it on my phone, and it's might like maybe like drop a link in like the
show notes
or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, it's the premise and the way the developers describe it is very simple. I don't have it right up here, but it's something along the lines of like Magic Wormhole is as simple as like two wizards speaking the same magic phrase at the same time and then pulls open between them so they can like give each other books.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And that essentially explains the entire thing.
And it really does. Yeah.
It's a tool that is so simple and effective at what it does that using it as a command line tool almost isn't complicated. Yeah. Like it's really just wormhole send, and then you just like put in like your file or like your folder, and then it just tells you the words, and then it actually even tells you what the other person has to type in exactly. So like you could even like copy paste it if you wanted to. And like I've done a fair bit of reading on the infrastructure of Magic Wormhole, and it's very interesting because it very closely mirrors a lot of the elements of Sync Thing. Because despite the fact that they're very different, they both just like send and move data across peers, and they both use relays to do it to connect peers behind firewalls. So like it's very simple in how it works, and it just sort of like does what it's supposed to sort of deal, right?
Yeah.
And like the relays don't even hold on to data. They just like redirect the connections, which is really interesting too.
Yeah, and they both use encryption, right?
Yes, they between the two. Yeah, Wormhole is end-to-end encrypted between the endpoints.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And same thing is as well, right? I mean, like yes, the devices identify each other by keys, if I remember correctly, right? Okay.
Yeah, they use public keys. Of course, your data is probably not encrypted at rest when your devices are on. That's always something important to keep in mind. But between devices, it is encrypted. I've done my fair share of sniffing my own local LAN for Sync Thing data because it's fun to do. They want you to do it. Sync Thing is very secure. it's a very cool protocol. Yeah.
Amazing. And Magic Wormhole, like 10 out of 10. Highly recommend. Fantastic tool.
I think another great thing to kind of mention with Magic Wormhole is there's a great app on F-Droid that you can get on your phone, and that app has, I think, four buttons on it, and it works just as well as as it would on your computer. Yeah, I've actually used it to send files across my local network just because like I didn't want to put it on a flash drive, and it doesn't even relay outside your LAN, so it's just kind of like a little like it's just like sending something over SSH or something like that, except significantly less confusing.
By the way, do you use KDE Connect?
No, I don't. I'm not very familiar with KDE.
So it is like it is KDE, obviously, but it's not like a super KDE heavy thing.
I hear you.
But it's a fantastic tool for I'm actually not sure exactly what the scope is, but the idea is like if you have an Android phone and you've got like a Linux desktop computer, those should be able to talk to each other. And it's kind of ridiculous that we don't have like a standard protocol for devices to talk to each other seamlessly like that. But KDE Connect does that. It just lets you like connect your desktop to your phone over LAN, and it's really nice and convenient. And you can do various things with it. Like you can use it to view notifications from your phone on your desktop and to move files back and forth. And I think you can like use your phone to control media playback on your desktop, stuff like that.
Okay, no, that I think I have heard of KDE Connect before. I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure some people I know probably use it. But yeah, I haven't heard of that.
It's pretty cool. There are a lot of really cool things in this space that are just like unfortunately very niche. Like these are not things that, normal people, quote unquote, use, but like I feel like they make things a lot better.
Yeah, and I really feel like a lot of them answer a lot of questions that a lot of like lay people have constantly. Like I introduced Magic Wormhole to some people who certainly like don't understand like how it really works, but like the idea of it and the fact that you can use it so easily is like really cool. So like, it really feels like kind of like find a need, fill a need sort of thing. I feel like Magic Wormhole is probably the best example of that. Like it does one particular thing very well, sort of deal. Which it really is sad that most stuff that fits into that category is quite niche.
Well, like you make something like that, you don't have a huge advertising budget, right? It's not a very profitable thing to do, which is good, to be honest, because
Oh,
like
yeah,
it
no,
shouldn't make
absolutely.
anyone like
It's pretty hard to profit off of anything that's peer-to-peer. I mean, really, I'm like, I could sit here and try to like brainstorm of like ways you could, but they would be so like far-fetched and like they would probably just end up destroying the underlying technology. But that's kind of usually kind of how making profitable software works. So
So another reason that peer-to-peer software is good.
it's really difficult to get someone in there that could potentially like make money off of it, really.
Do you know the story of GNUtella?
GNUT, I don't think so.
Okay. So GNUtella was a well, you're familiar with GNUtella, but you may not be yet. I'll get there. So GNUtella was a protocol for file sharing. I not clear on the difference between like GNUtella and BitTorrent. Like they're different protocols, but they do kind of the same thing.
Was it made by GNU, I assume?
No, it was made. No, this is really interesting. It was made by, I want to say, employees at AOL. It was some like major internet company, and they made this program, and like released it under the GPL, And then immediately afterwards, the company that they were working for was like, "Wait, no, you can't do that. This is going to be used for illegal stuff." But they had already, released it as free software under the GPL, and so it propagated, and people made their own versions and whatever. The reason that you will have heard of this is because GNUtella is the underlying protocol that LimeWire is based on, or was based on.
Okay. Well, then I do know of it, yes.
But I love that story of like they made something and just released it under the GPL, and then the parent company was like, "Wait, no, you can't do that."
Yeah, my mom actually introduced me to LimeWire at a young age.
Amazing.
Yeah, great, great, great parenting right there. Introduce your children to BitTorrent technologies.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a popular like GNUtella implementation. Do you know about I2P?
Yes.
Okay. So on I2P, one, there's BitTorrent on I2P, and there's like the reference client, the Java I2P client, contains within it a BitTorrent client called I2P Snark, which is cool. So like torrenting is very much an approved thing by the actual developers of I2P.
That's really cool. I will
Yeah.
have to check that out again. I sort of dipped my feet in I2P. I don't know, probably like a year ago or so. I tested it out a little bit, and I was having most of my concerns and problems had to do with like speed mostly. So I'm like, I'll probably try it again. And the thing about I2P is it's kind of hard to like pin down whether or not like that could have just been like some sort of like restrictive firewall thing having to do with like whatever ISP I was using. Like I don't really know. So yeah, I definitely want to try it again though. It's very cool.
I2P is cool, but there's a BitTorrent client like built into the I2P software. And also there's a project. I'm not sure what the like status of this project is. I just know it exists. But there's a project called MewWire that's it's an I2P GNUtella client thing as well. So there are like two different popular file sharing things in I2P. And that's sort of an interesting. I'm interested in having this conversation with you about the idea of like, I don't know what how best to call them, like Tor and I2P, things like that, considering them peer-to-peer, because they're like they are peer-to-peer in the sense that like I connect to another peer on the network, but they use like onion routing or garlic routing, something like that, to bounce the traffic through like six nodes in between me and my peer. And all the nodes in this sequence are like peers with each other, right? Like everyone's a peer. Well, in
Right,
Tor maybe
yeah.
not, but in I2P, like actually everyone is considered like equal. We're all peers. But it's interesting to me that it's not sort of conceptually like directly from me to my peer. It's like from me bounce around the internet some, and then it gets to my peer.
Right. Tor routes its traffic through circuits in a way that doesn't really make it like totally peer-to-peer, but like it's yeah, it the Tor onion sort of routing overhead part, they really like made that for a particular purpose to like sort of it's a little bit of a trade-off from P2P to make it kind of it's a word for it, sort of like reasonably anonymous, I would say, right? And I part of the reason I think I2P is very interesting is because it's a bit more directly peer to peer.
I mean, to be clear, in I2P, you don't you still connect through they call them tunnels, but like same thing as a circuit, more or less. I mean, not the same thing, they're unidirectional, but like same idea, right? You connect through a bunch of other nodes, but
Yeah, topology wise, it's similar.
I2P has the nice thing where, like, by default, or yeah, let's say by default, everyone is potentially one of those one of those hops in someone else's network, right? Everyone runs a router by default, which is really cool.
Yeah, whereas, just for like listeners, whereas for default with Tor, your device would not by default be a potential peer for other people's data. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah,
unless you are running a node, right?
Yeah, Tor has this strong separation between the nodes and the clients, basically. And I2P is like, yeah, all clients can be nodes if they want. Like, by default, everyone is a node. Except, like, the one reason I'm a little bit hesitant to say that is, like, if you're behind a firewall, then you can't relay other people's traffic. But, like...
Right. unless you, like, configure. Like, you'd have to configure that traffic.
Yeah, that was too simplistic what I said, but like,
I got Jimmy.
Yeah. I like I2P a lot. It's cool.
Yeah. I need to play around with it some more. I use a VPN a lot. So for that reason, I haven't, really used Tor a lot, at least on this particular computer I'm using here, because Tor and VPN don't really. Like, it doesn't really make any sense to use both of them. It kind of defeats the, at least that's from my knowledge, sort of.
Like, it's okay to do. There's a lot of discourse, honestly, about whether it helps or harms to use a VPN before connecting to Tor. But, like, you can do it.
Right, yeah. At that point, it's like, there's just so many moving parts that I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. People, oh man, I love going on to like Tor forums and stuff like that and reading the things that people say, because people have things to say and they are interesting, and often they have no idea what they're talking about, and sometimes they do know what they're talking about, and there are a lot of like random, like, unsubstantiated things that people just make up and say. It's fun.
Yeah, the Tor forums definitely have their fair share of, like, my credit card was stolen. I'm gonna get you guys at Tor. like, you know, like someone stole my credit card using Tor, ergo, the people at Tor are gonna, they're gonna get it, they're gonna hear from me.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I just like the people with like extreme threat models that are not actually defined. Like, threat model is everything, and also they don't really understand how any of the technology works, but they're pretty sure that they have to do all of these things or else whatever, blah blah blah. And it's like, you have to use like a VPN and then connect to Tor using a bridge and then whatever, blah blah blah, and like you have to PGP sign everything, and it's like,
PGP
kind of sucks, like maybe that's not the right answer.
Yeah, I think a lot of threat modeling is like, there's so many different moving parts, and we use so many devices and touch so many different services that our attack surface is sometimes so hard to even like, so hard to even consider like what to even consider an attack surface.
Yeah.
Right. Especially for like a, well, you know, people who don't like totally understand like, how things are working.
Oh, and the other big thing is that they, I mean, so much of, okay, this is really the thing. This is really the thing that gets me about all of this, like, this discourse, let's say. A lot of the things that they have to say have merit contextually, and there is no context. So they'll say, like, oh, this is the thing that everyone needs to do. And it's like, well, that, it doesn't make sense for everyone's situation. Like, you need to understand that there is context.
Right, yeah. You, like, they have a reason for wanting to do this, but we don't, like, we don't understand what that reason is at all.
Yeah.
So, and you don't know if that reason applies to you.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, stuff like that.
There's so much that's like, what's the, like, take VPNs as an easy example. VPNs are not a useless tool, however, they have like some very specific uses, and a lot of the things that they're marketed for are not really good use cases for them, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So there's like, people will love to, like, I love the question, for example, like, should I use a VPN? Or like, what's the best VPN to use, or something like that? And it's like, you really need to provide more information about, like, what are you trying to accomplish? What's your threat model? Why do you think you might need a VPN? Like, people love to say that what you need to do, like, you can't trust any VPN company, which, like, okay, fair. You can't trust any VPN company. What you have to do is rent a VPS and run your own VPN on that. It's like, yeah, like, oh, in all situations, clearly in all situations, the best option, regardless of what you're doing, the best option is clearly to have your own unique IP address that's only used by you, and to use that for everything. That clearly is the best approach for everyone, that we all need to be doing for everything.
Yeah, it's, I definitely have some thoughts on that as well. When I started to get into sort of like networking, but also, you know, security and privacy that kind of go hand in hand, and how that interacts with networking. And you know, I learned about VPNs and the such, and you know, the really good thing about a VPN is that that person that you can't trust that owns the VPN, you're relying off the fact that people are seeing their identity instead of yours.
Yeah.
So as soon as you buy a VPS and your name's on the billing address and like it's called like Penryn's VPN, if I'm just forwarding all my traffic to it, people still know it's me. Well, I mean, that's not my legal name, so I guess that's not a great example, but you know. Yeah.
And like, you get, I mean, maybe you get, like, again, it's all threat modeling, it's all contextual, right? Like, right. Maybe there is benefit to you for that. Like, if your specific goal is I want an IP address in this country, perfect. Like, perfect use case for that, right? Having a dedicated IP address for just you that's in that country can be really useful for what you're trying to do. If your goal is, I want some degree of anonymity on the internet, like, I don't want websites that I go to know who I am, I want to get lost in a crowd, then probably having your own unique IP address is not the right approach for that.
Yeah,
and like, also threat modeling about like how hard is it to find this information, right? Like if you're saying, oh, I just like, I want like a basic level of pseudonymity, but I'm not, my like attacker that I'm concerned about is not a government agency who's going to subpoena records from the hosting provider, like that could be perfectly fine. Recognize that you'll be the same identity every time you do things, but maybe that's fine, right? Maybe just operating under a pseudonym is perfectly fine for you. But yeah, like you said, like if it's, you know, you give your identity to the hosting provider and then it's uniquely you, like that may not be appropriate for your threat model. Like it's all contextual and there is no nuance to these conversations, and that's what's wonderful about them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. You've reached the end of this episode of Trash Cat Tech Chat. Check out the show notes for links and other information. This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 4.0 license. Music by Carl Casey at White Bat Audio.